They said if Trump won, sexual assault allegations would go through the roof, and they were right. More on the latest on this uprising.
LibertyNation.com. They're the resistance, but we are the uprising. With Scott Cosenza and Tim Donner.
There's not going to be a President Donald Trump.
Hey, a president! Can you believe it?
I love the poorly educated.
The voters have guaranteed themselves slavery, economic disaster.
I can't believe I'm losing to this guy.
You could put half of Trump's supporters into what I call the basket of deplorables.
Lordy, I hope there are tapes.
I have never met with Russians.
Putin is continuing to advance into Korea.
Gee, it's amazing that the Russians have been able to influence four special elections.
Welcome back to The Uprising, the podcast of LibertyNation.com. I have the pleasure to present today with Laura Valkovich, the newest writer at LibertyNation.com. And Laura wrote a three-part series on some of these sexual abuse scandals we've been talking about and continue to talk about. She is a former Australian national and has a lot of experience living and working around the world, which I hope teases your interest in her perspective on this and other things, as she hopefully continues to write great pieces for us at LibertyNation.com. So welcome, Laura. Welcome to the podcast and to LibertyNation.com.
Thank you, Scott. Although I should say I'm still an Australian citizen, not a former Australian national.
Well, excuse me, resident. Then let me, yes, I'm a libertarian. I don't care about nationality. Former resident of Australia. And she's also an expert on Charlie Rose and the Charlie Rose Show. So that's great news as we go forward to learn about what happened there. She's wildly waving at me to, no, she has no idea who Charlie Rose is. And that's actually, go ahead.
Sorry, Scott, not an expert. I don't really know who Charlie Rose is.
That makes my soul sing that the rest of the world isn't necessarily infected. So I'll give you, and by the way, hopefully there are plenty of people listening who also don't know who Charlie Rose is.
I'm aware that he had like a talk show, right?
Charlie Rose started doing long form interviews on American television, and because we didn't have much in the way of that, he was sort of lauded as this great intellect, and then he had a series on government television, basically in the U.S. We have this PBS network, which the poor citizens of the Republic are forced to pony up for the viewing choices of Charlie Rose and his friends. And oddly enough, that money goes to Charlie Rose, and so he made a small fortune then on with these government subsidized broadcasts on PBS, and then he was picked up by one of the main three broadcast television networks, CBS, where he has a long-standing relationship with them, until today, where he got fired. So, and in fact, so let's get into it. So you wrote a three-part series for LibertyNation.com, and the first part is Sexual Abuse on the Red Carpet, Part 1, Crying Wolf, a very provocative title and a provocative topic. Tell us, please, what the... Give us a thumbnail sketch of what you outlined in that piece.
All right, Scott. The point of the piece is basically that a lot of the accusations that are coming forth seem to be not for serious assaults such as rape, although obviously that's how it started. But we seem to have an increasing... number of accusations that are for very minor incidents. And not only that, but many of the women who are now coming forward actually kind of capitalized or benefited from staying in that system. And they didn't seem to have, when they didn't have a reason to come out to the public with these accusations, they were very happy to reap the benefits in their career. And
well, I think that's a great point to make, and it's also great that it was made by a woman and a young woman and an attractive young woman to boot, and not an older white guy. So it's an affirmative action, unfortunately, for that point because of the political nature of it. And, you know, Alyssa Milano, the American actress who has been credited as starting the hashtag MeToo Twitter thing, I have personal knowledge of her calling up. So she has a thing or had a thing for baseball players, sexually, okay? And she would call up or have her management call up baseball players and order them to her house like a pizza, okay? She wanted to be with a professional baseball player, and that's how she would get it, get the job done. She was a very attractive, sexy young celebrity, and she wanted a ball player, and she'd call and order him up. And this is the kind of behavior that I think is perfectly appropriate, you know, legally speaking, and people shouldn't lose their jobs over, but maybe viewed as somewhat sketchy on the, you know, sort of personal behavior front. But I think if it were a male celebrity calling up, you know, female gymnasts and trying to get them, you know, with no introduction, it's just like, oh, do you want to come over to my place and Netflix and chill, I guess. I think that the hounds would be out. And so I appreciate that you are calling out, hey, assault is not advancement and harassment is not making a pass.
That's right, Scott. I think, you know, there is a bit of a double standard. For example, in the Alyssa Milano case, if what you said is correct, I think the problem comes when someone who's in a position of power over an employee or something is exploiting that situation. So with Alyssa Milano, I guess those baseball players were free to reject her advances.
Just like the women on the other end of Louis C.K.'s phone calls, right?
Yeah, I guess so. Apparently, he did ask their permission to.
By the way, not technically. I mean, technically, asking a permission is like sending an email a week ahead of time, buried in a lot of legalese. Like, he flat out asked, yeah, "Can I do X, Y, and Z?" I don't know direct. You know, I'll renew my statement that I asked Sarah on the last podcast, Sarah Calgill, writer at LibertyNation.com, and I'll put the question to you, Laura, as I did to her. If a gentleman wants to engage in what might be called kinky or unusual encounters, when, if not after the bars close and the girl comes up to your hotel room, is it an appropriate time to ask for that kind of behavior? I just don't understand. What, you know, give the gentleman of the world or aspiring gentleman a guide. Well, it seems like that's the best time to do so.
Well, yeah, I see your point, Scott. I would only say that a woman who doesn't want to be confronted with that kind of proposition probably shouldn't go up to the hotel room.
Right, or should just leave when the question is asked. I think that's the appropriate thing, too. I mean, I've been in what adult hasn't, you know, who's lived on this earth for more than a few years, hasn't been in a creepy or weird situation that they just got themselves out of by, you know, not agreeing to go into the car or walking out of the hotel room or leaving the conversation. It's, you know, it's totally different. So Charlie Rose, so I will let you give you the 411 on. So basically Charlie Rose, because he owned the production company that produced his own show, was able to hire and fire and make sure that he hired pretty little, young women, and not burly men, because he wanted to then install them in his home under the guise of work, where he could then appear before them in various states of undress and, you know, try to get into some business with them. That and the other thing he did was he got handsy with them in the car. So he would say, "Oh, let's drive to wherever for work," and you know, they'd have to play defense. So. Totally different situation than we have with CK, right? They work for him. They're trying, and he's a big deal. He's got more, you know, he's got Emmy Awards, and he's probably on the board of the Columbia School and whatever else. So, Louis CK, you just hang up the phone. If you don't work for him, what's the big deal? But for Charlie Rose, it's a different situation.
Yeah, I think it's definitely a different kind of dynamic. I mean, Louis CK kind of seems like a bit of a you know, I don't want to say a creep, but, you know, it's not very nice behavior. But a woman's, or anyone who's propositioned that way, is free to kind of leave the situation, you know, as opposed to the situation with Charlie Rose, where these women were probably worried about losing their job or not being able to have the career they wanted as a result of rejecting him. So, yeah, I guess if it's a choice between, you know, either giving up your career or kind of allowing yourself to be taken advantage of, it's kind of down to the individual which one they choose.
Sure. How much money are we talking about? That's the no, I'm kidding. No, well, it seems like most of these women, it wasn't actually the choice between submitting to the advances or foregoing the career as they saw it at the time. It was shutting up about it and, or going forward with their career. And they, and most of them at the time anyway, chose to shut up about it. And they're now, you know, they're now telling their stories, which I think is a great thing for anybody who, you know, has actually been the victim of a rape, a sexual assault, or real harassment. And these Me Too, you know, like the Kevin Spacey thing is interesting because it's a male accuser and a male perpetrator. Did you see the press conference that surrounded the Kevin Spacey allegations?
I didn't see the press conference, but I read about the allegations.
Well, it's a doozy. Apparently, Kevin Spacey, who's a gay man, likes to spend time with attractive young men. And that's pretty much the nuts and bolts of it. There was this guy, he was in a bar drinking illegally underage. Kevin Spacey didn't know that he was underage, bought him drinks, and, you know, made a pass at him, basically. And they're making it out like it's some kind of sexual assault from this, you know... I don't know. Do these people go to bars? Do they see what happens when it gets close to closing time? I mean, people make a pass. That's one of the things I really thought was excellent about, I think it was it your second piece? Oh, no, it was your first piece. And, you know, it's like, how does a man know unless a woman tells him that his advances are unwelcome, right? So it's sort of like, you know, that's why it's called making a pass, right? You take a shot. Now, as long as that shot doesn't involve some, you know, monstrous groping or, you know, liberties with a woman's body or person, where's the problem there?
Yeah, I think that's one of the problems that has come out of this situation where something like a serious matter like rape is being kind of weighed the same way as something that's very mild. I don't think simply making a pass at someone can really be called harassment if it happens once. You know, harassment to me has implications of kind of being a very aggressive and ongoing kind of behavior that
is perpetrated by an unattractive male.
No,
I think that's a frequent standard in the United States is, you know, how hot is the guy, right? I mean, a hot guy or a guy who is perceived as hot by the object of his affection can get away with murder. And if you're perceived as being a troll, well, then you can't even say, hey, nice haircut, or you're going to be written up by human resources.
Well, I guess to me, harassment is when once you've already said no, then it continues.
It's an ongoing, it's a pervasive, and I mean, ongoing is part of a legal standard of harassment throughout common law countries. I mean, you cannot have one instance of harassment, right? It's an annoying encounter, but it's not harassment if it's not ongoing. So.
Yeah, I don't think, you know, a man or a woman should be really dragged through the mud for one incident that you know, they apologize for, unless it's something that's really serious.
Sure, sure. Well, so for Harvey Weinstein, for instance, there, you know, there are incidents of even non-touching that rise to the level of criminality in the United States, which I think we also have to kind of be mindful of, which is, so for instance, Weinstein, apparently one of his moves was to block women in a room so they couldn't leave, which is a civil tort in America and a criminal act. So I'm not saying that, you know, you have to be raped in order to merit you know, rebuke of the perpetrator or criminal sanctions against him or financial remuneration for the victim. It's not about, you know, touching necessarily, but we can't invent new, like, oh, somebody said something to me and I thought it was really creepy. And then the more I think about it, the more creepy it is. So they should, what, lose their job? And it happened, oh, by the way, it happened 30 years ago. So anyway, all right, let's move on. I want to talk a little bit about your second piece, which is subtitled Blaming the Victim. And why don't you tell us, if you would, a couple things about that?
Sure, yeah. It just looks a bit at, it seems as if the response to any kind of critique of these allegations is that we can't blame the victim. But, you know, while many of these women have been victimized by Harvey Weinstein or other people in the industry, if they allow themselves to be to capitalize on that situation, are they still victims? And also, I don't think we should, it seems like, sorry, Scott.
No, it's okay.
It seems like
I'm picking up what you're putting down, and actually, so I think that, and I've heard discussed, is if there is currency in victimhood, then we do have to be mindful of that fact, and be ready to be somewhat skeptical and ferret out those who are trying to achieve victimhood status in order to gain that currency, rather than the people who have earned it, unfortunately, by actually being victims.
Yeah, that's right. I think there's a difference between someone who's really a victim of sexual abuse and someone who is kind of just
has a rough time of it. Okay. Well, that brings us to another and the third part of your series, which talks about Islam and the rape epidemic across Europe. Certainly there are too many victims there to really tally, it seems like. What are your thoughts on the juxtaposition of these two crises?
I think it's a strange paradox where, on the one hand, in America, the UK, women are being told that almost anything they perceive as sexual harassment is grounds to make a complaint. And we're being told that, you know, these women are serious victims, we need to take it very seriously. And on the other hand, you know, there's a civilization who you know, it's known that women are second-class citizens and are victims of sexual abuse constantly, and yet we are not allowed to say anything about it because, in that case, we're racist. And we're seeing the consequences spread not only from Islamic countries, but with the migrant crisis, this is spreading throughout Europe as well.
So what's the answer, Laura, as we wrap up here, this episode of The Uprising, where we have, when this airs, we will have just celebrated our break from your new countrymen's oppression, celebrating American Thanksgiving. Do you have any prescription, policy, or culturally for these crises? What should we be doing as a society that, you know, what's the low-hanging fruit on improving these things, if there is any?
I don't have anything in mind.
All right, well, we'll work on it. Thanks so much. Laura Volkovich, Australian national, and LibertyNation.com writer. Thanks so much for joining us, Laura. Cheers.
Thanks, Don.
LibertyNation.com. They're the resistance, but we are the uprising. With Scott Cosenza and Tim Donner.
There's not going to be a President Donald Trump.
Hey, a president. Can you believe it?
I love the poorly educated.
The voters have guaranteed themselves slavery, economic disaster.
I can't believe I'm losing to this guy.
You could put half of Trump's supporters into what I call the basket of deplorables.
Lordy, I hope there are tapes.
I have never met with Russians.
Putin is continuing to advance into Korea.
Gee, it's amazing that the Russians have been able to influence four special elections.